information, education, and respect is what you get on the Progressive Radio Network. Incredible knowledge, incredible ways to make your life better. The whole idea is to help the veteran thrive, help the veteran's families thrive in their life. Well, the holiday seasons are upon us. We're only about a week out from Christmas. This is really important. I know for me, I spent 3 Christmases in a combat zone under fire, so it's not real pleasant to have that. Ray, you kind of did the same thing, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, Doug. And, you know, we talked before about the holidays. Sometimes they'd fly out turkey or fruit cake and different things to you. So you got a little, but, you know, the biggest thing I guess they did a stand down and a ceasefire, what they call it, for a couple of days, and it gave you a little reprieve. So it was good when you got it.
Now, unfortunately for me, there was no ceasefire. I mean, we talked about my Christmas story before, bombing on Christmas Eve, and that was, for me, that was an incredible experience because God did definitely came to our entire crew of 7 of us that evening after we bombed on Christmas morning. Bob, Pastor Shaw, how does all this play into it? What can individuals do? What can families do to help them get through this period and the time?
You're talking about especially if they are separated from their military loved one?
Oh, absolutely. Both cases, sir.
Well, as far as the home front is concerned, the families that are stayed on the stateside while their loved one is serving, one of the better ways to support them, obviously, is to do it perhaps through the church or through the local ministries that may exist on base or on post. The idea that when one feels separated, it's that much more amplified during the holiday season, during the Christmas season, because obviously what we are used to growing up is being together as a family, having an opportunity to exchange gifts and to remember what the real meaning of the season is really all about, and that is when God came to us. Namely, he comes into our life to bring us back to him. So when families feel separated and they're not with a particular loved one, especially because of deployment, meaning that they're in danger, it could be that much more difficult to help them feel like they're connected. So churches on base or on post groups and ministries can be very, very strategic in helping them feel that way. As far as the service member is concerned, when they're deployed, oftentimes, you gentlemen have talked about, is a ceasefire may take place, or in your case, Doug, that may not have happened. So the community that you do already have among your comrades, among your buddies, that can be something you can amplify to help that Christmas time and help the sense of feeling connected still be a part of what you experience.
I want to add one thing to that, too, Dr. Shaw, is that today with Skype, there's a lot more communication between family and, you know, the guy maybe deployed or wherever he might be anyway. It could be anywhere, mm-hmm. really. And I think it's very important that the family always gives the most positive side they can when they're talking to him and don't tell him all the bad stuff and everything going on. But it's just a time for families to get together. You know, God gave us the desire, really, to have peace and,
yes.
you know, joy and family. And when you're talking about a holiday, it's actually came from a holy day. And it was a day, yes. Something like the Sabbath to the Christian, where it's a day of rest and family and worship for God. So mm-hmm. that's part of the holiday season. But Skype is a big deal, and or it's even cell phones are calling your loved ones sometimes and just touching home. That's a big deal. So.
It is, and I would agree with you that it doesn't have to be a matter of let's deal with business stuff going on in the home. It's a matter of just connecting, letting the service members see their kids, talk to their kids,
right.
Just glory in the presence and glory in the idea that you feel connected even if you're so far away. And you're right, the technology we have today does help a lot.
Yeah, right.
At that same time, that technology can be harmful too because. Yeah. If you want to be there and you can't be there and you see them and you see what's happening,
mm-hmm.
what's happening around you, because if your mind, and we all know this all too well, if your mind gets disrupted in the middle of combat or when anything can happen, this is not a good day in River City.
Mm-hmm. No. I remember when I was overseas, my last tour was 2009. to 2010, I was in Camp Liberty. We was using Skype, and they knew every holidays we had, like Thanksgiving, Christmas, things like that. And we always get murdered every single time on holidays. And in order, and they used to murder us in order to tick us off, in order to get us off Skype. And they and military have this, we call blackout type thing. Once we get murdered or somebody got hit, they completely cut all our communication of Skype, phones, emails, everything. And we could, and therefore we cannot actually contact our family, which is what drove us nuts, because that was during our holidays. So therefore we had to actually wait for the next week or so if someone got hit, injured, or that case, during the holidays. And of course our family members was worried what's going on, because they knew within that week we did not contact, because we always always tell them, hey, within that week, if we don't contact you, this is what happens, you know what I mean? And they, of course, they always worried. So it's not just us stressing. Also, our family members also stressing during the holidays when this happens.
Let me say one, too, and it's great having you on the show today. I'm Ray, by the way. In Vietnam, you know, out there in the bush, you knew that a lot of the North Vietnamese small units never got the stand-down orders, so you could never really stand down. You could never take your eyes off the ball. But one thing our family does today is that we've got a pretty large family. Most of them are grown. They're out there with their own families. And so on Thanksgiving, on Christmas, on Easter, what we do is we don't celebrate on that particular day. We go to the Sunday after that, and that's when we have our Thanksgiving or our Christmas or our Easter, because it really doesn't matter what day it is. And plus, everybody that way gets a chance to go to their in-laws and outlaws and stuff. And then on the Sunday after, we all come together as a family, about 35 of us all together with the grandbabies and great-grandbabies. And so we found an alternative in what you were just saying right there. You can have, I mean, if you coordinate with your families, you might be able to do a different day, because I could see how the danger would be. The enemy doesn't care. He'll monopolize on anything. But you can actually make another day for your family to, you know, coordinate it with it, and then you can celebrate the holiday on Skype or whatever you're going to do, but it would be designated a different day.
Something else that's important, whichever loved one is left back at home for those that need things, and I know we did this in our family, there was always a gift from, you know, myself when I was deployed or whoever else was deployed. So something very specifically that the other half had gotten for the rest of them were sitting there. So they have some, hey, even though they're gone, they're remembering me. Because I think that's a really critical factor, because if they're gone and separated out, you still have to maintain the everyday normal traditions. Because if that falls apart, it seems to me it all falls apart, doesn't it, Bob?
It does. I mean, again, the idea that a family can feel connected and feel like they are interfacing and being together, it's important to be able to make adjustments. I mean, to a much smaller degree than you guys ever experienced, being that my wife is a medical professional, as a nurse, there were often times she had to work on the holiday. So we just had to get used to, and our kids learned to get used to it, making adjustments to having our particular family day a different day than the actual day it fell on. So just like Rick talked about, it's a matter of adjusting. And if it's a matter you can communicate with your loved ones that, okay, I may not be able to celebrate Christmas this day on the 25th, but bear with me, and I'll try to connect with you a week later, and then we'll make that meaningful, whether it's exchanging gifts or watching the gifts being opened via Skype and just, you know, sharing love and pleasantries back and forth. What matters is that you feel connected, that there's a home front that's still waiting for you and cares enough about you while you're not there at home that makes the season that much better.
That's one of the biggest factors in not only the life of a person being deployed, but when they come back home, they haven't been disassociated with their family, and it's not so hard to fit back in. And I've known people to hold off celebrations until they get back home and things like that. But they really need that touch, Doc, is while they're gone, they need to know somebody cares about them. And that's one of the healing factors that have been missed quite a bit, but is very important.
And to your point, Doug, yeah, there may be some individuals who have struggled by the fact that they are so far away from home, especially in harm's way, and they have to resort to being in contact with their loved ones via some computer. And that can be hard for folks, realizing that it would be nice, much nicer, if they can just touch flesh and blood. But in the midst of the season, in the midst of that particular challenge, it still can be very, very meaningful.
I know one thing was extremely important to me, and again, the Vietnam era and then both Desert Storm Christmases away on all of those. But we had the opportunity in Vietnam, I mean, right before I went and flew a B-52 bombing mission, directed bombing mission over a massive concentration of North Vietnamese, we went to church. So it was exactly the same thing as what we had been raised up with and what we saw.
Mm-hmm.
We went in, you know, for candlelight services on Christmas Eve, and I think that's a tradition I know throughout the United States and probably a lot of Europe where I visited.
Yes.
But you maintain that simple thing, but even though hours later, I mean, all hell was breaking loose, so to speak, and yet you still had that connection.
Yes. And if it mounted to maybe 30 minutes or 60 minutes of peace on earth, then yes, that was indeed something that could be celebrated nevertheless.
Well, I think that's what keeps the thing about humanity in your heart, maybe, is that you know war is tough and war is not normal, but there is a normal life somewhere, and you're always being reminded of that family, the home, the party, the this, that, and the other. And I think it helps to get you through those trying times, just to keep that in mind.
I got a question for you, gentlemen. Did you ever have the opportunity to participate in a USO show while you were deployed? I mean, was that meaningful to you? If you had that, was that something that was helpful?
I saw Bob Hope three times, and to this day, it brings emotions beyond comprehension. At the end of every Bob Hope show, they had the entire cast, and they had the entire assembly of all the troops from everything all over singing Silent Night.
That's awesome.
To this day, tears flow in my eyes whenever I hear that song because of that incredible emotion for three war periods and three Christmases.
Well, I was up on the DMZ, and you know, my book was talking about that, but I had malaria one time. It was the best thing to happen to me in Vietnam because I got to sleep all day and all this and sleep in a bed. But they told me that Bob Hope was up on top deck, and so I climbed out of that bed, and I mean, I was sick as a dog, too. But I made it all the way up to the top as I saw his helicopter flying away from the ship. So I almost saw him one time. It was funny.
I got to see Kid Rock overseas, and just to see him in the concert, I just came back from a mission, and I was just tired. And we came back from being outside the gates on the convoy route, and I had to go see Kid Rock, and I was debating, should I go or not, because it was one of those 24-hour missions, and I said, well, I'm going, because I need something to make me feel better. I need something to make me feel back at home. That's what I needed, and I'm just glad I did. I went there, and I felt like I was back in the concert, back at home, and Kid Rock he's good. And it was a great time, and we felt like we was in the rock, you know, having the rock, and it's free, too. Mm-hmm. And I felt like we were back at home, you know. And
while you could have been in Vietnam or Korea or the Middle East, and with your comrades and fellow soldiers and Marines and such, you had individuals like Kid Rock or Bob Hope who were representations of what was home.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought that a little bit to you folks. And it allowed you to be distracted enough to make you feel like, first of all, there's enough people that care about who I am and where I am and what I'm doing. And even though you were with basically other soldiers and other warriors, there was a time where it was just ministering to you, because it represented what it was like at home, was it not?
That's correct.
The downsides of all of this and the problem, and we definitely need to discuss this, is when it starts falling apart, and despite all of these efforts that we've just discussed, the individuals have a tendency, well, I'm lonely and I'm all there, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, the alcohol is flowing. What can we do, or how do we fight that, or how do we liberate ourselves from that? Because it seems, and it's not just at Christmas, but anytime you get loneliness or under stress or anything, mm-hmm. the first choice is to numb it, and that's alcohol and, in some cases, drugs.
Mm-hmm. Well, it always brings other things with it, Doug. It brings more depression. It brings a lot of bad things out a lot of times. And, you know, it's associated with suicide and a lot of things. And so you don't need to be under the influence of hardly anything when you're near combat or in combat. I know, you know, up on the DMZ, we didn't have hardly anything like that. They might give you two beers every 2 weeks, or you got two Cokes or a beer and a Coke, maybe that's what it was. And it was all shaken up, and you couldn't hardly drink it anyway. You get washed by it. But what I was saying was is that you have to be careful not to become under the influence of drugs, alcohol, or anything like that, because you take on a different mindset when you're doing that. You become very vulnerable. And, you know, I hope commanders have kind of lessened that, and, you know, because it does have some negative ramifications to it.
Too often there's Christmas parties and unit parties, and I've been to them, and I made the conscious choice not to drink, but somehow that's part of the camaraderie and everything. Well, we're going to make the booze available, and the next thing you know, it's sliding into oblivion. Well, I still don't understand why that happens or why people need to resort to that. I guess when I was raised and brought up in our family, yeah, they might have a glass of Christmas wine or Thanksgiving wine. That was, you know, one glass or two glasses was always part of it. But there wasn't drinking, so to speak, going on around it, I guess. That's your family and upbringing, isn't it? Isn't it? It's quite different across the whole nation, I guess.
Well, how we're created. We're created to have Sabbath. You know, it says in the scriptures that man was not created for the Sabbath, but rather Sabbath was created for man. And the reason is that part of how we're created is that we do need rest. Mm-hmm. You can talk to any medical doctor, and he will say the same thing, that our body needs rest. The time of sleep is extremely important. I say all that to say this. When somebody's in combat and deployed in combat, the chance to rest is very minimal if it exists at all. So taking drugs or drinking alcohol provides a distorted way of looking upon what it can be to escape a little bit, to find a little bit of rest in the midst of hell. And unfortunately, it is a distorted way to find that, because it doesn't really bring you rest at all. It may medicate for a moment or several moments or for a little bit of time, but it doesn't provide the rest that we are really created to have to benefit our body, our minds, our spirit, our emotions. And so it does have that draw to it, the drugs and the alcohol, to provide that is basically what we've been created for.
Well, I know that, you know, we take a break. That's what you were talking about, a holiday or anything else like that. It's talking about letting your hair down and taking a break or whatever, you're doing, relaxing more or less. But it always seems to be when you've got alcohol involved or any kind of drugs, it always gets out of hand. A lot of people just can't take two beers and leave it alone. They got to keep drinking. And the way I tell them, at Camp Lejeune many times, I'll be telling about alcohol, and I said, you have a couple drinks, and you'll kind of get lightened up, and you're telling jokes, and everybody's laughing, and later on you have a few more drinks, and then you become obnoxious because you've lost contact, and they're not laughing anymore. And then a few more drinks, you throw up on somebody, and the party's over. There's a lot of fist fights. There's a lot of things that take place when people get down to that relaxed state like that, and you just mm-hmm. can't fight your enemy. The Marine Corps used to have a book called Know Your Enemy. This was years ago. And they talked about the Russian army. The best place or the best time to attack, say, for instance, the Russian stronghold would be about, I think, 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock on Monday mornings. They were coming off the weekends. They were all blown over and and they were coming off their drunks and everything, and they were not be able to fight you as well. So it, I don't care what army it is, especially the military today, our military, you got to be careful because the enemy doesn't take a break. This young warrior talked about that, about you just can't, you can't assume they're going to take a break with you because they will attack you every time you give them the vulnerability.
I'll tell you the reason why I drank alcohol. I mean, when I came back myself, I felt like I was totally changed. I felt like mentally and physically, I totally changed. And even my ex-wife found that out myself, and she felt like she was totally in the harm's way with me, with my post-traumatic stress and everything. And to be honest with you, I was drinking to self-medicate myself. I'm being honest with you.
Yes.
And
yes,
try to get rid of my stress and try to get rid of my fears of the world because I was scared. I didn't know what to do, and I was totally confused. And I was drinking to just get away. And to be honest with you, I didn't care. I didn't care about my life. I didn't care about others. I was in that stage, and I was drinking so much that I almost killed myself because I was puking blood. I'm being straight up, and thank God actually I got, my dad told me to, why don't you just go to church, and that's what saved me. I'm being honest with you because I could be still, as we today, still drinking,
and
don't care about myself. And what drinking caused me? Drink caused me depression. And I went straight to, I almost suicided twice. And I went straight, popped my bills not paid because I was paying all my money on alcohol. And I can tell you more if you want me to, but that's probably another time we can talk about. I just hit rock bottom.
That's a classic thing. I mean, what you just described is every one of us that came back, and me in particular, I can say that. But, you know, the way I explain it, too, I said we grew up in a place called Disney World. It's America. It's different from any nation in the face of this earth. It's like bright colors and noisy and laughter and have fun. That's what you do at Disney World. And then we go into a third world country, and we where we saw in color, they see in black and white, life and death. And we think they're really mean people, but they're not. They've been raised in a very hard atmosphere. And we, as warriors, have to get as hard as they are to fight them. And then when we come back to Disney World again, we don't fit in back anymore. It's like, you know, I just, there was a disassociation there. They didn't understand me. I didn't understand them. And alcohol seemed to be the reprieve that I needed. And I went into a lot of alcohol and drugs trying to feel normal again. And I could associate with what everything you were just saying.
I even include FC the VA. I feel like the VA actually doesn't understand what we're going through. And all they do is actually feed us enough of medication and then feel like the medication is making us worse. You know, that,
Well, that's drugs.
Yeah, exactly. That's the same thing. And I'm taking right now, as you speak, about 15 medications a day. And I'm trying my best to try to get off these medications. And this...
Well, I've been able to get off everything except they took me off. I finally got off of morphine, and they put me on tramadol. I finally got off Seroquel, and they put me on trazodone. And that's the only two I take for pain and for sleep. But they had me on 8-hydrocodone a day. They had me on all kinds of stuff. I hardly ever took an aspirin before that. And I became really... under the influence of drugs through the VA. And it was a lot of doctors trying to help me, but all together it was killing me. And I was suicidal.
Here.
And so I was able to go to these doctors and tell them, I've got to get off of this mess. And through their help, they were able to wean me off of this stuff. And now I feel better than I've ever felt in many years. And, you know, mine came through the same way. I was invited to go to church, and in that church service, it was almost as God ambushed me that night. And I poured my heart out to him, and I said, God, forgive me of what I've done to you. And God just blew me away. He forgave me that night, and I came out a brand-new person. And I've been doing that for 36 years, so you can do it.
Yes.
And you've been instrumental in telling me that today, too.
That's the main thing is actually forgive yourself and forgive others. And once you get that, that's one of the first steps. That's one of the steps I learned is actually once you forgive yourself, what you've done, exactly what you hit the nail on the spot, and yeah. it takes off of that because we're burdened things on our shoulders right now as we speak, and we feel bad about ourselves, what happened and what we could have done, you know, I mean, things like that, and we got questions and everything else, and
yeah.
it's a path to the past, and we just need to take day at a time. That's all we got to do. We don't need to look in the future, because I learned to look in the future, all we're going to do is overwhelm ourselves. Just take one day at a time. That's what I learned myself. And it's yeah. working for me. It takes less stress.
Well,
I have found that is indeed the most difficult thing to do is to forgive yourself, whether it be spending time with military personnel like you folks, or last week I spent some time as an in-service speaker for the state troopers of Virginia, and they're in a similar situation. Depending on what their calls look like and what they've had to do on their calls, that forgiving yourself is a difficult thing to do. And perhaps maybe a good way to look at it is, before you can forgive yourself, perhaps you can say, Lord, I don't know how to forgive myself, but please forgive me and help me with me.
Yeah.
Because God is not going to withhold any time of forgiveness once we come to him. He's a giving God. He doesn't withhold. But then he will also help us in releasing ourselves. So that's probably the first step, even before we forgive ourselves, is to seek him out.
Is there a part in here with Thanksgiving and Christmas and the real meaning of Christmas that we all obviously believe in and know where it's at? Is this what leads us so much trouble? Because in the military, you've been involved in military operations, and all of us have been, for one thing or another. The police and fire have been in horrific situations. You don't know what's going to transpire. And you know this is the underlying thing, what we're supposed to do, love thy neighbor and treat and peace and all this stuff. And yet you're totally involved in this other situation for which is out of your control. Because I think, and we've all talked about this, the fact that we've all had the opportunity to have done and killed before.
Mm-hmm.
Don't feel bad about that. It's the other stuff that comes into play, I think. And how do we get by this? How do we get through this? What do we look for? What do we have to look for in these holiday things to help those that might need help as they hit a crisis point, Bob?
Well, Doug, one thing, we talked about this before, but, you know, Christmas is really a hodgepodge of things, and actually it was a Roman holiday for a worship of the sun god that, you know, the Romans were worshiping, and during the wintertime, the days got longer, and it got shorter, and the temperature dropped, and so these people would build bonfires trying to get their god's attention, of the sun god, and so it was a world of a different thing. It actually was on December 25th. That's where it started. And so I'm sorry about that. It was in the wintertime. But in the 4th century, the Christians decided to start worshiping the birth of their God, the Christ, on December 25th. And what it was, they had to hide Christmas from the world because they would have been persecuted and they would have been killed had anybody known they were Christians. So they worshipped on a pagan holiday. But even in today's world, it is a world that is still pagan. You know, pagans, they drink, they do drugs, they do a lot of things, a lot of crazy stuff going on and all. And then you have commercialism of today's Christmas that just drives people crazy. They buying things they don't need with money they don't have, and they're buying people things that they wish they had themselves, and they're spending a lot of money. But the Christians, they're still in that thing, and we still worship the God of our salvation. He gave us peace, and all four of us understand that exactly. I could not be healed. And what I say is the VA gave me medication and therapy, but God gave me peace and forgiveness. And through all of that, I guess, because God doesn't need help, but those things did help. But through all that, I can become a normal human being again, even in spite of my past. And I can't spend too much time looking in the rearview mirror, because you can't drive a car looking forward looking in a rearview mirror. You can't run forward looking behind you. You've got to keep your eyes down the road. And I've learned a lot of secrets along the way about moral injury. We had that 2 weeks ago, I guess it was, about how God has to heal this heart of this old warrior for me to ever be healed again. So it takes a lot of things, but I think that's why God gave us a time to holidays, more or less, of worshiping Him and coming close to Him and getting the healing we need.
Yeah, you touched on it, Ray, and it's really, and then the question that you posed, Doug, does really have to deal with moral injury, and that's something that doesn't get talked about enough when it comes to service members, military service members, or even first responders that I have had the privilege of spending time with. Because morally, you know, there's certain things that, even within our upbringing, there's something that usually gets imparted to us as to basic rights and wrongs. And we will miss the mark quite often, but when something overwhelms us with something that we've seen was it's something that cannot be corrected. The wrong that we did, if we believe it's so bad that we cannot correct it, or how can we possibly even see an answer to that, we become overwhelmed by that and stuck. And that moral injury has to have an answer. And the one answer is that there is absolutely nothing that God cannot touch. There is absolutely nothing that He hasn't come and taken care of. And it's more than just us coming to God, because we have to first realize, especially at this time of year, that He came to us.
Yeah. Doc, when I teach classes at Camp Lejeune on moral injury, I try to liken, explain to them that morality is based on the conscience of man. God gave us certain laws of the conscience, and I don't care where you go in this world, in the Amazon or anywhere else, people know that there are certain laws that make civil society. Don't lie, don't steal, don't commit adultery or sexual sins, don't kill each other unjustifiably, and don't be greedy. There are five natural laws of morality. And when you do certain things, you violate those laws and you end up with a wounded conscience. So moral injury has to do with a violation of the conscience. Post-traumatic stress has more to do with fear of dying. And so they say there's more suicide with moral injury than there is with PTSD, really. Because it's the violation that makes you feel so guilty and shameful and those type of things. And that's what I teach at Camp Lejeune. But there is a way to get that conscience healed, and it's not a better time to do it because of the birth of Christ. He came to heal us. God came to heal us. And He spent 33 and a half years in this world teaching us how to walk and stay clear of all the sin in this world. And then He died for us. And a horrible death, even beyond description. But then He came back in 3 days. God raised Him from the grave. And today, if we could just believe that and call on His name, He would set us free. And what a Christmas that would be, Doc.
Yes.
That would be amazing.
Yes, indeed.
All you got to do is ask, and you'll receive.
That's right. Well, what I tell them is, this is a simple thing that I tell people. If you don't believe in God, I understand that completely. I talked to an atheist one time. He told me he didn't believe in God. I said, you know, you can know if He's real or not. And the atheist said, how? I said, look up. So he looked up, and I said, repeat after me. Say, God, if you're real, prove it to me. Show me. I want to know. The guy told me, he said, I'm not going to say that. I said, why not? If He's not there, don't worry about it. He said, I'm not going to say that. I said, you're afraid He's going to reach down and slap you in the mouth. What you doing? And he said, I don't know about that, but I'm not going to do that. And I said, what you're telling me is you do believe, but I said, God will not do that, because He said in Deuteronomy, if you will seek me with all your heart, you will find me. And God is not going to send somebody to you like our friend Dr. Shaw or you know, others. He's going to come Himself. He's going to make sure you know who He is. And I do believe it will come through the person of Jesus Christ. And He will let you know. And I've known people to do that. And I've also known the same ones that found out for sure. And one person told me, he said, if I die and go to hell, I can't say there's not a God, because I found out. They said, actually, He touched me and I knew it. And so, you know, I go on that little bit of a theory there, that people that wonder about if there's a real God, well, you can find out. You just ask Him. You don't have to ask people. Ask Him yourself, and He'll show you.
Where does a person go for help, Bob, if they get into trouble, or families get into trouble, if they're connected together or if they're separated? How do they get help, or where can they go for help? What's out there? What resources are available? Who do we go to?
Oh, that's a good question, Doug. If they happen to live in a community, let's say like Fayetteville or Jacksonville in North Carolina, where Fort Bragg and Camp Lejeune might be, or up near Fort Campbell in Kentucky, wherever they may be, if they happen to be close to a military base, there are some churches in those communities that do have a specific ministry towards military and their families because of the community that that church happens to be in. There may not be a lot of them, but there are some that are that is true. Now, if you're in a community that may not have a military base nearby, and let's say you are a veteran, and for maybe for a time you've been able to keep at bay all the things of your past that are now coming up to haunt you, that may be a little bit more difficult because not all churches are designed have in place certain things to help a veteran. There are 800 numbers that are available for veterans, whether it be PTSD hotlines or there's general suicide hotlines that could be helpful at times. But by and large, it is difficult for someone, unless they're in a community that happens to have a base and some churches who are ministering to that specific and unique population, to get the help. And so a lot of times it's a matter of then finding perhaps a Christian counselor nearby, a Christian counselor who can maybe speak to that. If the churches don't have particular ministries, but perhaps a Christian counselor has a little bit of training to be able to help the service member, that's another option.
We're talking about, this requires very specific training. It's not just your average run-of-the-mill psychoanalyst or psychologist or psychiatrist that gets this, and I
Correct.
Mean, there's a big difference. A psychiatrist is an MD who specializes in the brain, and a psychologist is a social worker. So this is substantially different training that each has to get versus dealing with the general public, versus dealing with the police and the fire and the medical, versus dealing with the military, isn't it?
It is. It is. And there are some counselors who happen to have in their background their own years of serving our country who can speak to that. But in my case, while I never wore a uniform, I grew up in a military household, and I have one son who served in the military, one who still works for the Department of Defense. So there was something around me that generated enough of high regard and high respect for those who serve our country. And so in my case, I have a desire to serve those who serve me. And there were times that I indeed had to be mentored by someone who spoke your language. And I was mentored by someone who spoke your language, and I was like a sponge taking that in because I desired so much to be viable, relevant, and impactful to those who serve us in such a way that is so unique. You're absolutely right. And it does take some training and a desire to respect the uniform and to respect those people who wear it and what they see and what they experience. Even though I may not have any idea, I let them teach me so that I can help them.
Yeah. One of the things I deal with, and I deal a lot of people other than military, because there's so many hurting people in this world, they seem to be around us all the time, is that, post-traumatic stress really has to do with trauma. A lot of people haven't had trauma, so you can't have post-trauma without trauma. The other thing is the moral injury, though. I'm getting ready to work with a family, one of our friends. Actually, the husband left he went out to Texas on a duty transfer thing for a short time. But while he was out there, he found a girlfriend and ended up leaving the entire family back here. And they got two teenagers and a young teenage girl. I think the older ones are like 19 and twins. And then there's a 14-year-old and the wife. And so he abandoned them. And that's part of what moral injury has to do with. And so I'm getting ready to do them through a program called Moral Injury, and it has a lot of things. What you said before is that it does have things you have to get them to forgive those who've hurt you, but that's easier said than done. But what you have to do basically is let it go. You've got at some point to let it go, because I remember in Roman, in the history, they used to, after you killed someone, they would tie or chain a body to you, and you had to carry a body around for a week or two, a dead body, and that thing would be bloating and the skin separating. It would get real greasy. It really stunk like crazy, had bugs on it. And so this baggage that you were carrying around became very antisocial. People didn't want you hanging around them anymore, not because they didn't like you, but they didn't like the baggage you're carrying around. And there's a lot of people who've been morally wounded through the acts of other people, not only their own selves, but other people, and it becomes a heavy load for them to carry, and it becomes a very putrefying thing in their lives, and it covers a lot of territory. But I do try to get them to understand you've got to let it go at some point. You have to forgive it and then move on. But you have to also ask forgiveness for a lot of things you've done, and you can do that through sending letters or notes or a card, or you can just say, oh, look, I was out of my mind. I am so sorry. So you write those things. But then the third one is getting forgiveness for yourself, you know, forgiving yourself for what you've done, and that's a hard one. But then the fourth one is that you go to God and say, God, if you could help me, forgive me for what I've done. And I'm telling you, it will give you reprieve that you've never imagined.
If I can add just a piece that could possibly help the whole situation in just a very short time, and I know the format, you know, when it comes to helping and walking with somebody through this valley of the shadow of death that they often feel, there's one thing that gets so confused that perhaps is a major hurdle for most folks, and that is this. When we think about forgiveness, we also believe that it has to include forgetting.
That's right.
That is not true at all. Because what they're thinking and saying when they say that is that you have to forget, meaning that you have to change your past. You have to change history. Well, first of all, that's impossible. You cannot change history. However, what can change is what impact and what effect history has on you. That is the piece of forgiveness. You can let what it has done and how much you have beat yourself up over the things you felt and experienced and done. You cannot change what happened, but you can change the effect it's had on you. So if that can be separated so that that no longer puts a person in bondage so that they cannot forgive themselves because they feel like, if I forgive myself, that means that that stuff never happened. That is not the truth. The truth is you can let yourself be free from the impact it's made on you, not necessarily being free from the history itself.
I got something to say about one more thing. About one more step added to it, I believe triggers also. You got to understand your triggers also. Mm-hmm. And once you understand your triggers and what they all are, and try to stay away from them, at the beginning, stay away from them.
Right.
And once you stay away from them and ease yourself into your triggers, you know what I mean? To ease yourself so you can get used to your triggers, not to like full-blown get yourself, because you're trying to get yourself used to yourself again. Like, for example, one of my triggers is after she getting overwhelmed after she in stores. I'm trying to bring myself into small stores, not big stores. You know, a lot of people in the stores. I introduce myself into like a family Dollar General place or something with less people. Just trying to ease myself into it, and it helps gradually get myself into it. And it's just like baby steps. Take the baby steps. But there are also some things that it's hard to get rid of. It's not as easy just get rid of. You know, just to
it takes longer, doesn't it?
That's correct. For example, like something that just goes off and bangs behind my back.
Can I explain one thing to you that I found out about me? And you're talking about post-trauma, basically.
Yeah.
That when I was in trauma, my brain produced adrenaline to get me out of that trauma, that super fight, flight, energy, everything going on. And it helped to get me out of that battle, and you too.
Yeah.
Well, later in life, through a sight, sound, or smell that is reminiscent to the original trauma happens, it could be in Walmart, it could be anywhere, a bang, a pop, a snap, whatever it is, that is reminiscent. what happens is my brain gets confused and thinks I'm there again, so it starts pumping adrenaline.
That as adrenaline if it was still present.
Well, the adrenaline the second time is through a memory, not an actual event. So that
right.
all that energy from the adrenaline goes into what is called a panic attack. And I'm hyperventilating and such. And when I hyperventilate, my brain begins to lack oxygen, so it begins to close down blood vessels. And I feel like I'm choking. I feel like I'm suffocating. I feel like, you know, I got to get out of this place. And it puts me in a panic mode. And what happens is if you can get oxygen to your brain, it will actually open those blood vessels up and you normalize. And what I use is a nasal inhaler. You buy them at Walmart for $3.50, $4, $4.50. And all it does is it opens up your sinuses so you can get a good shot of oxygen to your brain. I used it today, matter of fact. I was in this church service where they were having a funeral, and it went on, and I started getting really antsy. I mean, I felt it closing in on me, and I pulled that nasal inhaler out, and I just sniffed on it. And all it does is open up your sinuses and nasal passages. But all of a sudden, I breathe in real good through my nose, held it for a second, blew it back out, and I calm right down. So
really?
You may want to try that sometime.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to try it because I'm the same way. Actually, I get so frustrated. I get overwhelmed multi times, and I get that adrenaline rush, my heart pounding, and
yeah.
I get so anxious so much that it's hardly hard for me to think.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, let me tell you one thing, too. I've met a lot of people through the programs that I do, and it came out of combat. So you can get out there, and once you learn things, you can pass it on to other people.
Okay.
But I met a woman about a year ago, and she was telling me about an incident when she was 13 or 14 years old. She got raped by multiple men, several men. And actually, she was telling me about it, but then in the conversation, she stopped and kind of, like, chuckled. And she said, I don't even know why I thought about this. She said, the other night I was laying in bed reading a book. This is like 30 years after she was assaulted. She said her husband came and got in bed with her. And she looked at me and she said, I smelled baloney. And I wanted to beat his face and I wanted to rip his head off. I hate baloney. Do you know that come to find out the men who had raped her was eating baloney? And now through the smell of baloney, she goes into a panic mode because her brain gets confused and thinks she's there again. So, see, we're on the telephone today, but we're learning a lot from each other.
That
God has put us together, and the God of all peace, the God of Christmas, the God of love, the God of mercy is saying, look, guys, I got some help for you out there, and you need each other to learn these things. So I hope we can help each other.
That's amazing. God is amazing, too.
That's been the whole purpose of this show and why all of us have gotten brought together to help and educate and discuss and look what's happening.
Yeah.
The family member, the spouse, or the children. The child sees all this stuff happening around them. The child has no way to understand or comprehend what's going on. What do we do with the children? How do we help the children? I mean, to try and explain what the father or the mother is going through and why it's such a nightmare. How do we help the child? And when I mean child, and we all talked about, we've talked this in a thing, and Bob, you've been very clear on this, even that young military that's 18 or 19, they're still a child mentally, aren't they?
Yeah, developmentally, the prefrontal cortex, the front part of our brain, doesn't fully develop until we're in our mid-20s, and that's the part that helps rationalize what we're feeling. So up until that point, our feelings and the amygdala, the center part of our brain, is what is driving our view of life, our view of self, and a view of God and the world around us until our developmental aspects take place in our mid-20s or so that can help offset that. Yes, we are going to be a little bit more vulnerable to some things that affect us.
Yeah. Well, I think girls mature around 14. Is that right, Doc? At least they think so anyway. But,
not really.
And that's the problem with going into the military when you're 18, 19 years old. They send you into combat, and you're really not prepared for that type of trauma. And we expect them to come home and just go back into society. But they have been literally changed. They've been altered. They have been in a world of life and death. And if they profile everybody when they come home, and they feel odd. They don't want to be around big crowds. They don't want to be noises because they've known before, just like you talked about the Skype and things. The enemy knows. They're smart. And so you have to always watch everybody, and, you know, you become antisocial. If you go into Disney World, start talking about bad stuff, they probably put you out because you're ruining their day. And so that's where we are, but we have to help each other, and that's what this program does.
Well, I think
to answer your question, Doug, to help the children, a lot of times it's depending on their age, depending on their developmental state,
sure,
as to what we can do to tell them what's going on with their mom or their dad who happens to have been deployed. And to their understanding, they may be able to grasp some things, but there are some things that they may not be able to grasp. So, for example, if a child accidentally drops a spoon on a tile floor, it's going to possibly make their parent a little jumpy. Mm-hmm. And they may not be able to explain that. And obviously, they didn't mean to do it. They had no intention of causing their mom or dad to have a reaction. Then there are children that may indeed have some intentions of doing things like that just to see their mom or dad have a reaction. But most of the time, it's an accidental thing. And so it's more than just telling the children, more than just teaching the children. A lot of times, it's family-oriented therapy, family getting together to help the growth of understanding one another, what can be done. But that particular service member also needs to know that they may be the catalyst to all of this, and that they indeed still need some personal, individual time to put that past behind them, however that may be.
Yeah. One of the things, Doug, you talked about Christmas time and veterans. You know, we used to go to the USO every year at Christmas time and Thanksgiving. We haven't done it in the last couple of years, but I'm supposed to call them today and find out about it. But you can actually call USOs or like VA hospitals or nursing homes or places like that, and where old veterans are or people that have been hurt. Or the USO is a great place for military to come, and you go out there and actually feed these guys or help them out, talk to them and things. The more active we become when we begin to practice compassion rather than hardness or harshness,
yeah,
those type of things, it makes us a better human being. I think combat will make you a better human being than not being in combat, because you've seen both sides of that fence. And when God forgives you, you began to forgive other people, and you began to show compassion toward other people and mercy. And the Bible says if you don't show mercy, you'll not get mercy. So I've got to show mercy. And the more merciful we become, the more moral, the more decent, the better fathers, better husbands, all these type of things, better wives, because, you know, we've got to do it. The Marine Corps, I will never not be a United States Marine, or the soldiers, or the sailors, or the airmen, or the Coast Guard, whatever they served in. And mm-hmm. So we have a responsibility to do that for our families and fight for them, really.
You're talking about...
You know, there's a good news, bad news thing about this. The good news is that about 20% of all those who serve in the military and who have been deployed, about 20% do develop PTSD to some degree. That's the good news. It's still a minority. The bad news, though, is that being that it's 20%, those who do come home with a level of PTSD will feel like they're weird. They're the weak ones, that they're strange. Because everybody else seemed to be fine, why am I not fine? So that's the bad news part of that. But however whatever the reason is for that person to have been affected by what they saw compared to perhaps their buddies and comrades who were not affected the same way, that's what doesn't matter. What matters is that they see themselves as a person worthy of getting the help that they need so that they can get their life back, as Rick, you talked about. Getting your life back, getting back to yourself is really what it boils down to.
Yeah.
Well, you got to get involved in everything. I mean, so much, I know with our time and everything, you come back and you get the family involved. We got all the Christmas plays and the stuff at the library and the churches. This is where the entire family can get involved in working together, the mother or the father, whichever was deployed. They're setting the standard that life does go on, and let's get involved and contribute to our community and come together as a family to make a difference in everybody else's life.
Mm-hmm.
And you can really see incredible stuff. Like locally, we got, you know, Christmas Carol and Charlie Brown's Christmas are the two main Christmas plays here in our Eastern Illinois right now, Champaign-Urbana. And we're seeing entire families totally involved in it. Mm-hmm. And the joy and the peace that just pervades is astonishing.
Yes.
When I came back to myself, I felt like numb, big time numb. I'm not just sure my medication or whatever, actually, because my post-traumatic stress or whatever the case be. Mentally, I felt numb. I felt no love. I didn't feel no love to my family. I felt like love to my friends. Before I left to overseas, I always felt automatic love. You know what I mean? When I come back, I had to force myself to love. It was terrible. But when I went to church, yeah. I gradually getting this feeling of love, you know, happiness,
right.
Joy, you know, gradually I'm still getting this love, you know, back,
mm-hmm.
normal and everything, which is awesome. It's a blessing.
Well, we've had another incredible show, and God bless everybody. Merry Christmas. Ladies and gentlemen, next week we will be broadcasting on Christmas Eve. So for everybody together, we will be reading the Christmas story and discussing the true meaning of Christmas. God bless everybody. Thank you, Pastor Dr. Bob. Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Chris. And evening, ladies and gentlemen. God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.